Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Got a great show planned for you and a little special guest interview. We're going to be joined again by Kevin Muir of the Macro Tourist blog. Kevin fits our MO of the kind of people we like to have on the show. I'm sure this will come to no surprise to you guys, but the world of finance is filled with a lot of big egos. And very few original ideas. And all the guys that we try to get on here are guys that are practitioners, right? That are craftsmen. And I don't say that tongue in cheek. I just mean that they're guys that are focused on the work, and you know aren't worried about you know whether they got the new Rolex on their wrist, and they're not worried about pretending like they're a big finance guy. They're just trying to get it right. Low on ego and big on intellect. And Kevin is just, I just love the guy. And he is very unassuming. You might, even meeting him, you just think, oh, he's just a normal guy. Kevin's a brilliant guy. And he just is not impressed with himself. So always good to hear what he has to say and give some context to things. So stick around for that interview. I think it's great. And a guy that has actually been the head trader on a derivatives trading desk at Toronto Dominion Bank. So, I mean, just valuable insight. This guy is a pro's pro. He's a institutional money manager at a hedge fund. Just valuable insight, and just feel grateful that we can get that kind of access. Anyway, now let's get right into the market update. Because we got the interview, we got to go through things quickly, and we got a lot to cover. First of all, market update. This is a little bit more like the action that I anticipated. I think that the market is starting to sniff out some of this global weakness that we've seen. We're sitting here on Friday, almost afternoon here. No, we are slightly afternoon. We record on Fridays. For those of you who don't know, I got kids, and if I didn't record on Fridays, I'd never see my family. But we got that jobs report out, and the thing that I think it is interesting about that is that, you know, that we've seen a downtick in economic activity. Again, it's not recessionary, not flashing red lights, but some yellow lights. And the last kind of unadulterated, unmarred leg on the stool has been job creation. And again, not in the tank, but it was a significant miss on the jobs report. And it's been a while since we've seen that. And again, one report does not make a trend, but it's something that bears watching. Interestingly enough, the market has acted accordingly. We still haven't been able to break that level at 2,800 on the S&P. Again, it's not bullish or bearish. There are no trade advice on this show. Not what we're doing. But just something to keep an eye on. The other thing, we've seen some of the strength kind of come out of oil here, which would make sense. Gold was kind of struggling, but gold bounced back really good today. And the interesting thing about that is the dollar's rallying at the same time. That, to me, is an indicator we need to keep our eyes on, because the theory all along has been when duress or financial stress reappear into markets, I would expect the dollar and gold to rally at the same time. That's a bit counterintuitive, but the reason why I think that is because of all of the excess, all of the imbalances out there. I think the rush to safety when this cycle does finally end will be overwhelming, and I think gold will get a spillover effect of that. Now, that's just a thought. We're not betting the house on that by any stretch of the imagination. I don't want you to either. But it's just kind of one of those indicators that we've been looking for to show that financial stress is really picking up. not seeing that rebound in the FANG stocks, too, that's another thing. I really think the indexes are going to have a really tough time making an advance if those big market caps that are leading the index don't start their march again. Okay, so that's something we want to definitely keep an eye on. You know, as for the rest of it, we're still just trading. We're in this wash cycle, right? We can't break through 2,800 on the upside. Obviously, we bounced very hard off 2,350, that bottom on Christmas Eve. So, you know, right now, it's kind of wait and see, right? Wait and see. Valuations continue to be obscene. And you know what? As part of the market update, let's get to the important stuff, okay? And I want to make a couple comments because we did a segment last week on Boeing and Palo Alto Networks. And if you didn't catch it, it was a bit of a rant, okay? And if you enjoy some rants, go pull it up. But I wanted to reiterate a couple things because I will admit that segment got a lot more attention than I thought it would. And I can't even get into all the attention that it got because I don't want to put people in a bad position. But I am not bashing on Boeing. Okay, I just want to make that very clear. I think Boeing as a company is an outstanding company. I think it's a stalwart of the U.S. economy. And as I've said about so many different companies, guys, when we're not critiquing the company or, God forbid, the people that work there. I have family that work at Boeing. I've got employees who have family that work at Boeing. We love Boeing. Okay, just let me make that clear. I think Boeing makes the best airplanes. I think they've got a phenomenal product. It doesn't mean it's a good investment. Okay, and I am not recommending you sell it. I don't know what your long-term goals are. I'm not recommending you short it by any stretch of the imagination. We don't do that. Okay, if you want investment recommendations, become a client, right? What I am pointing out are overbought and overvalued scenarios that I think can get investors hurt. Okay, and we're just trying to make you aware of them. We're also trying to show you how we do not believe in this stick your money into mutual funds and pay me 1% a year, basically doing nothing for you that you can't do for yourself. And then as a quote unquote fiduciary, justifying the charge that I charge you. And when you're in that world, which I've worked for several of the big firms on the street as a broker, what they tell you is you're not there to give clients better results. You're there to hold their hand and make sure they don't do something stupid. Okay, I think that people are smarter than that. And I don't think that that's justification for paying somebody 1% a year. So I make no bones about the fact that we're trying to do better for our clients. Now, look, there's going to be years. There's going to be periods of time where we don't. But as investors and when we're managing retirement accounts, the key is, what is the end result? What is the long-term outcomes? That's what we need to be focused on. And if you want that type of insight, if you want to even know what it looks like, if it sounds so much different from what you currently have, it is. And if it intrigues you, if you feel like you're not getting bang for your buck where you're currently at, guys, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. We think outside the box. Right. And we show that. That's one of the reasons we have the interviews on. We want to show you that not only do we think outside the box, but there's a whole nother level of this stuff. And the world is far more complicated. And if, like Bill Fleckenstein, you know, he's got a track record beyond reproach, came on this show and said, if you think you're going to own your mom and dad's portfolio and it's going to do just fine or it's going to do for you what it did for them, you know, you better think twice. It's not going to happen. The world is different. The structure of financial markets is different. So if you want a different take, if you want to know how we're increasing upside for our clients, lowering risk and lowering costs drastically, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to Bulwark's website. If you don't want to talk to us directly, you can email with us. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. We're pressed for time. Got a couple more topics we want to go over. And then we're going to have our interview with Kevin Muir. So stick with us. Great stuff coming up. As always, thank you for joining us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book. Too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to Know Your Risk Radio. And, our list of influential and distinguished guests, it continues today. And we're going to go around the globe just for an update. A lot of crazy stuff going on out there. A lot of changes. And I think that our guest will echo that. And since he is known fondly, I might add, in the Twitter universe world and by his blog as the macro tourist, I thought who better to have on than a good friend of the show, Mr. Kevin Muir. Kevin is a market strategist. In my opinion, the most important market strategist for East to West Asset Management, and based in Toronto. It's based in Toronto, right, Kevin?
That's correct.
Yep. And so anyway, without further ado, Kevin, thank you for joining us, and it's great to have you back.
Well, it's great to be with you again, Zach. I'm looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, well, that's what you say now. We'll see in 20 minutes or so. Okay, first things first. Where are we at? Let's kind of give me a macro rundown of what you see. We're clearly seeing a lot of the PMI and ISM numbers around the world not looking too hot. A lot of things pointed in the wrong direction, and yet we've had this, I don't know if historic's the right word, but we've had this just face-ripping rally since December 26th. So let's start first on the macro side. What do you see going on out there? And then is this rally for real? Was this just a buying opportunity and the bull market's running again?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that the U.S. has been kind of resilient, where the rest of the market, the economy, the global economy has been one by one, we've been falling. It started in Europe, and then it eventually went to China. Even here, we're Canadian, and I noticed that our economic numbers have definitely been rolling over lately. And the real question is the U.S. Kind of the last man standing and eventually going to also succumb to this malaise that's kind of been enveloping the world? Or is there something different that's going on? And I really think that that's the question we need to be asking ourselves to determine whether this rally that we've gotten since that kind of December 24th low, is it a bear market rally? And did we, in fact, top last October? Or was this move that kind of the move late last year, was that merely just a kind of a correction in a bigger picture? I have my opinion, and I must say that I kind of feel like the economy, the global economy, is entering into a recession, and that the U.S. is eventually going to also succumb to the same forces that the rest of the world has succumbed to. But you could make an argument that it really, to some extent, it's things are different in the States, and maybe this there's more room to run on the on this rally. And one of the things that I look at is, we kind of had that decline in December. And since then, when you look at the markets, the stocks that have been leading, it's actually broadened out. No longer is it just kind of the FANG stocks leading, but you actually see the equal weighted index outperforming the S&P 500. So if you go look at the RSP ETF, which is basically an equal weighted S&P 500 index, it's up 18.2% from the low, whereas the SPY is only up 16.5%. So you could make the argument that we're actually seeing some signs that things are good, and maybe it's not as bad as everyone thinks.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and it's obviously a bit confusing to me because I'm sure like you, we weren't exactly loaded down in the FANG type stuff. Very much more on the value side of it, and I've been pleasantly surprised by the performance of some of those other stocks. Yet at the same time, still wondering. Look, those stocks are, they're not going to fare well in a recessionary environment, just like the FANGs. Just trying to wrap my head around, what that dynamic playing out is. Do you think it's maybe, the FANGs, the index guys and the FANG lovers, they got really took it to the chops there in the last 3-4 months of the year, and maybe they're branching out a little bit? Do you think we're seeing value make a comeback? What do you attribute that to?
Well, there's no doubt that value stocks are cheap. They're still not leading the way on this rally. The FANG stocks have definitely lost their momentum. People aren't rushing into kind of those four or five names anymore. Another interesting thing that I've kind of noticed is if you pull up the SPLV index, which is supposed to be a low volatility index, this thing is just running like it stole something. And whereas the S&P hasn't hit new highs, this thing has broken out to new highs. So there's no doubt that there's a lot of different kind of shifts within the market happening. And it's difficult to determine whether that's the sign that this market has more legs, or is it the sign of just, the last kind of little bit that we're going to kind of see in terms of the people rushing for the few stocks that haven't yet gone up, and that's what we're seeing. I'm kind of more in the latter camp. I think that this economy is rolling over. I think you see it today with the unemployment numbers. They weren't as good in the States, and you're finally seeing some problems. And I think that we're going to look back, and it's just going to be this rally. It's going to be nothing more than a chance to sell into.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that take. Let me flip one around on you here. We did a segment last week about Boeing and Palo Alto Networks, and two completely different companies, obviously different sectors, different businesses, all that kind of stuff, different stages of growth and life cycle and all that kind of stuff. And it was probably one of the most controversial segments we'd ever done because, well, we're Seattle based, so if you say anything about Boeing, you're gonna ruffle some feathers, right? And we were talking about the efficacy of buybacks, and there's a lot going on, on the stock buyback debate. And I think that what I've noticed is my personal take, and I know it won't influence what you have to say, but my personal take is, look, I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think stock buybacks can be a wonderful thing. I think they can also be an absolute abomination. And when I see these companies running hot, trading at record valuations, going into debt to buy back their own equity, it's an absolute head scratcher to me. Furthermore, when I see companies like a Palo Alto Networks that's trading at, I think it's 11 and a half, 12 times sales, something like that, negative cash flow, going into $1 billion of debt to buy back the stock, that's even more of a head scratcher. What is your take on this whole buyback thing?
Well, I try hard not to kind of make an opinion about what should be done and just kind of focus on what will be done. So I don't try to make judgments about what, where policy should be headed. I just try to think to myself, where is the market going to go because of what will be done? And when I look at buybacks, one of the things that I think that's interesting is that there's no doubt that companies have taking out a lot of debt to go out and to buy back their equity. And you've seen this, that there's record, like as you mentioned, there's record buybacks throughout and all sorts of industries. And there seem to be doing it at points that don't make any sense in terms of economics. But one of David Rosenberg, who's the famous Merrill Lynch analyst, I was at a dinner the other day, and he brought this the point up about how much of investment-grade bonds have become triple B. So if you think of investment-grade bonds are kind of the creme de la creme of bonds, and they're the companies that can borrow at the best rates, and that's anywhere from triple A's all the way down to triple B's. And he was noting there's been a huge trend in terms of the number of investment-grade bond credits that are actually become triple Bs, meaning that, you know, it used to be that kind of 25% of, I don't know the exact numbers, but it was something like this, 25% of, you know, investment-grade bonds for triple B 10 years ago, and now it's something like 50%.
Yeah.
And many people hear that stat and then they use it to say, well, you got to go and you have to short investment grade bonds because this is going to cause all sorts of problems in the credit markets. And there's a disaster waiting to happen because of all these triple Bs that are going to get downgraded and they're going to become junk. And once they become junk, they're going to basically be forced to borrow at higher rates. And his point, which I completely and utterly agreed with and I thought was such brilliance, he said, well, imagine you're a treasurer or you're a CEO of a triple B company and you're on the cusp of getting downgraded to junk. What is going to be your reaction? Are you going to go and go and enter into a big CapEx spending? Are you going to go do a big buyback? No, the answer is you're going to do everything you can to try to keep your triple B rating. So I think that's actually one of the biggest headwinds for the equity market going forward is the fact that this number of triple B, you know, credits in the system has never been higher. And you're going to see a cutback in terms of both on the CapEx side and, more importantly, on the buyback side. So I think that we're in the midst of kind of peak buyback, and that when we look back, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now, this trend will all be headed the other way.
See, this is why we have you on. That's a great point.
I wish I was smart enough to think about that. That's Rosenberg came up with that. But once I heard him to say that, I was like, that's a genius, you know, conclusion. Because many people's knee-jerk reaction is to go out and go short credit and to go short the LQDs or something like that. And that's not how this thing's going to play out, in my opinion. It's going to play out through the equity market and the economy. And so I think both of those kind of reactions, as those companies are so desperate to try to keep their triple B rating, will be, you know, negative for both the economy and for equities.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering what it's going to do to the overall business, though. That means they got to back away from the trough, right? I mean, they won't be able to keep bringing in capital. I just wonder how much that, you know, how many issues there are out there, how many securities there are out there that are going to get hammered when they. You know, whether it's market induced or whether it's self induced, whether it's self governance that reins in that borrowing. I think it's a brilliant point by Rosenberg. I still don't know. Short and high yield. It looks attractive to me, but that's a brilliant point. That's certainly tempering my opinion for sure. And for those of you just joining us, we're with Kevin Muir here, market strategist for East to West Asset Management. And also, Kevin, if people want to follow you, we can obviously go Google the Macro Tourist blog. You can find him at Kevin Muir, M-U-I-R, on Twitter. Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Kevin Muir on Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham.
Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show, and let's get right back into our conversation. We're being joined with Kevin Muir, the market strategist for East West Investments. Another thing I wanted to bring up, because I drive a lot, going to a lot of different client meetings all the time, and I have started listening to you and Serezna's show that you're doing, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thought you guys have great content. It's fun. It's informative, and you guys are getting down to business. Where can people find your show?
Oh, that's very kind of you to say, Zach. It's the Market Huddle. So MarketHuddle.com. It's also a YouTube show, so you can actually go there and see. We post some charts and have some fun videos, and we try to have a little more fun than some of the kind of more staid, boring finance stuff. So don't go if you're not prepared to kind of have some fun, because that's the number one name of the game there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons we like to have you on, too. We like to talk to guys that aren't too hung up and impressed with themselves and just like to, get down to brass tacks. So if you're a market nerd like I am, you want some insight, some laughs in a laid-back manner, I think the Market Huddle is a great place to go. And and we can also learn about some craft beers there as well, too, right?
That's right. Yeah. We do a little drinking as it's going along, so we always have a different sponsor that's and we kind of experiment with some of these Canadian craft beers. So it's been a lot of fun that way. I've never known how many different beers there are.
It's certainly a more laid back, enjoyable atmosphere than our show. Unfortunately, we can't.
Oh no, this is tons of fun. So.
But there's no libations.
No drinking though.
Yeah, there's no libations. Right, unfortunately. Yep. Okay, so another one I wanted to hit with you, and this isn't new. This has been going on for a little while. Gold and the dollar, I thought we were going to break trend there. It really looked like gold was, we hit 1350 and we just backed away in a hurry on the price of gold. Gold and the dollar, though, are still showing signs that they want to go. They want to rally together. What do you make of that? What are your thoughts on that? What are you thinking?
So I kind of laughed because I guess it was a little less than a month ago I wrote a piece, and it was a gold bullish piece. And when I started the piece, I wrote something to the effect that I've been waiting for a pullback in gold to write this piece, because even though I'm going to give you a bullish argument for the long term, I'm still the trader in me is worried that the moment I write this piece, the gold market is going to go down. And so I was waiting and waiting, but there was no decline. So I finally bit the bullet and posted the gold piece. It was a bullish gold piece, and I only missed top ticking it by a week.
Yeah.
So it eventually did roll over. I think it went up first. And the point of my piece was that central banks throughout the world have been accumulating gold for the past 5 years at a rate that we've never seen before. And I think it's a really interesting dynamic that you're seeing, whereas the previous decade you saw central banks divest in gold. And, Canadian Central Bank was one of the worst culprits of this. We sold all our gold. We weren't quite as bad as the Bank of England who pitched the gold into the low at $300 or something stupid. Oof. Like that, and marked the absolute low in the gold price. But it's been interesting to me how we can see, and you can go look at my chart, you can see the fact that central banks, like whether it be Russia or China, all these central banks are buying gold. And I'm of the opinion that if you look at gold in non-US dollar terms, like if you go pull it up in Australian dollars, it's kind of hitting new highs all the time. In Canadian dollars, it's doing pretty decently. In euros, it's doing well. I think that we have hit a point where, it hasn't broken. It's never going to break in terms of its relationship with the U.S. dollar. But you will see times when it outperforms the U.S. dollar. And I think we've entered in one of those periods. So, yes, on big dollar up days, you're going to see gold go down. But I still think that on the whole, if you're someone in Europe or Canada or Australia, we're going to wake up, and kind of a year from now, chances are gold's going to be much higher.
Yeah. No, I'm from your lips to God's ears, pal. Gold has been a conundrum for me for, it's It's a hot potato, right? I mean, when it's starting to run and it makes its move, you want to be there. But it can be a house of pain for an extended period of time. And we jumped on it right at December 15th, the Fed announcement of that last rate hike. We saw a similar setup to the end of 05, of 15 and beginning of 16 when gold made that nice rally. And then we hit 1350 and just backed away. And we just decided to kind of pull back and take a small profit. Well, much like the timing of your article came out, we did that, and then you see this bounce back we've had today. And I was just kind of laughing to myself. But
I think to answer, like, you really have to wonder. I mean, ask yourself, what do you think the U.S. dollar is going to do? So I'm actually curious of what you're feeling. You know, we're going back up to the high of the trend right now, or of the range, and a lot of dollar bulls are kind of coming out of the woodwork and getting all bulled up again. And I'm just wondering what you think. Do you think that we can break out to new highs? And what's your prognosis for the dollar over the next little while?
Okay, well, this is new. I've never had a guest ask me a question, but
I'm curious what you're thinking.
Honestly, I kind of think it's a bit of a tail wagging the dog scenario, in the sense that I don't think that the dollar is going to lead the way. I think that if we are heading into a global downturn, I think the dollar is going to continue its ascension, and when I say that, Brent, Santiago Capital, Brent Johnson. He and I have had some discussions about this just over the phone and over Twitter, and I see it much like he does. It was really hard for me. I was a big dollar bear after 08-09. Part of that was inherited from, you know, where I came from and how I was raised, and went to the gold conferences, and I just remember sitting there at the end of beginning of 2011, thank God, and saying, you know, I don't see the inflation coming, right? It's just not showing up. And as much as that blew my mind, we backed away, thank God, big time from gold, and just didn't really touch it for the next 4 or 5 years. And I'm not, every time I say anything dollar bullish, I just, you know, I don't get attacked, but you just ruffle a lot of feathers. And I just always want to look at those people and go, look, long term, I'm just as bearish, if not more bearish than you are, but it's a structural issue. If we're heading into an economic decline, I don't see how the dollar doesn't rally significantly. If China pumping, and if the U.S. launches QE, which I think is inevitable, if they do that and they're able to float equity prices and they're able to stabilize economies, I think you'll see the dollar pull back. That's kind of probably like a duh answer, but if we're going into decline, much like every other downturn, I just don't think this time is different. And I think the dollar rally, you know, will probably be bigger, and it'll be bigger because of a function of how much debt out there is denominated in U.S. dollars. I can't see around that. I think Luke Grohman, the work he does, I think he's brilliant. I respect the guy immensely. I just can't get past it. The other reason, Kevin, and I think you and I were probably raised in the same school of thought, just I was trained to look at these things in a way that if it can go wrong, it will. And, I look at the world and I go, what is the biggest problem economically for the world? I mean, barring exogenous threats that you can't predict. And if the dollar, if the DXY goes to, 140, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Yeah, 140. I think if it goes to 110, it's a problem.
Oh, yeah, excuse me. I was thinking of the TLT. I was getting them inverted.
Yeah.
You're right.
No, because it doesn't take much. And that's, I think, was one of the problems that we saw, why eventually the stock market had its kind of sell-off in December, was, the threats that the Fed was going to continue to be hawkish and keep rates higher and cause that pain to continue.
Yeah, no.
So I hear you, and I think it is kind of it is an interesting question, and I think everyone should be watching it really closely, and it'll be interesting to see if we do get a break above this range, because we're right at the top right now, and we didn't quite break out, but will the stock market be able to rally with the dollar? And Brent Johnson from San Diego Capital, I really like his work and think it's great. The one kind of pushback that I have against him is that I don't doubt that you might get a situation where the dollar rallies. I don't think the stock market, the U.S. stock market, can go with it.
And
that's kind of would be my pushback to Brent.
Yeah, I think it was within an exchange that I had with you and Brent where I said, you know, Brent's got a whole milk milkshake theory, and I'm more of a skim milk or 1% milkshake theory, because I agree with you. I'm with him. I just think if you see a spike up to 110 or God forbid 120 or even higher on the DXY, I just can't see the dollar or stocks rallying alongside. I can't picture that. You know, maybe some of these sin stocks, you know, like an Altria, or, you know, that are paying, you know, really good dividends and tend to have pretty stable cash flows throughout recessionary environments. Maybe those kind of things could catch a bid because the world is so desperate for yield. But I'm with you. I can't see the indexes levitating with DXY. Nothing's impossible, right?
Never say never. Good trader, never say never.
Okay, well, you know what? That's a great opportunity for us to take a quick break. But we're going to have Kevin with us when we return, at least for a little while. So stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are, the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss, and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, guys, welcome back. And we're going to get right into it because we've got Kevin Muir of the Macro Tourist blog with us and the market strategist for East to West Asset Management. Sorry, I just keep tripping over that. Okay, another one I wanted to bring up to you because it's near and dear to my heart. I really don't know why, but volatility has always been something that I've just been obsessed with. I find it fascinating. We have not seen volatility markets return to normal since the Volpocalypse or Volmageddon or whatever you want to refer to it back in early February last year. And I thought for a second we might start seeing it getting suppressed again like it was during that period of time. And we've seen a pop up. I've got the VIX at 17 right now, or right about there. What are you noticing? Do you pay a lot of attention to vol, Kev, or do you not? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm an ex-index derivative trader, so there's no doubt that I also love volatility like you. Being, you know, working at a bank, though, I spend my whole time always short volatility, so I'm not one to be kind of long. I hate the theta decay, and I was the worst long vol trader around, so I'm not kind of hoping for a move upward. One of the things that I'm watching, though, is that I contend that the next crisis won't be led from the stock market. I firmly believe that the next crisis is going to come out of the bond market. So one of the things that interests me is the fact that the MOVE Index, which is kind of like the VIX for fixed income, is almost at the all-time lows.
Really?
So, yeah, and it's just there's been no, and I understand central banks pinning kind of fixed income throughout the world, you know, suppressing volatility. There's no doubt that that should cause it to be lower than in the past. But it still strikes me to be that if you wanted to play for a problem occurring, that playing in the fixed income in the treasury market is a much better place to go than to be long equity volatility.
What is the how comparable is the theta in fixed income volatility versus equity volatility?
Well, don't forget, fixed income volatility, depending on which tenor you're trading, which year you're trading, will be much less.
Okay.
So you might have stuff that's trading at like 2 or 3 vol and stuff. The move index isn't necessarily an absolute kind of percentage like the same way that the VIX is. It's more of an amalgamation of different tenors, meaning different maturities, and then they just kind of put it together. But it's just kind of on an absolute basis, it's as low as it's ever been. And the same for foreign exchange volatility. It's also kind of, when you go look at that, it's also sitting at kind of not all-time lows, but it's also kind of scraping along the bottom. So although we find the situation where, you know, maybe equity volatility hasn't gone back down to the stupid levels that we saw before the VIX, the volacopolips or whatever it's called, but we definitely have seen other asset classes, their volatilities, their implied volatilities trading much lower. And see, the problem about owning VIX is that even though it might seem cheap at 15 or something, I think that the realized, meaning the actual volatility of the index is running below that, and it's more like 10 or something. So, and what that means is that if you think about that an option buyer, for them to make money on kind of trading the volatility only and just kind of taking out the bet on which way it's heading, because option traders can isolate and take out the delta, meaning the move in the actual index, and they can trade the volatility portion on its own. And what they end up betting on is whether the index is more or less volatile after they buy it at a specific implied volatility. So even though it's trading at 15 and you might say to yourself that's cheap, well, if it averages over the next 30 days only a realized of 10, then an actual, you know, professional trader could be short that kind of straddle or however they wanted to do it and earn that 5% difference.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of the things that you need to be so wary of, is the fact that it might seem kind of cheap, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, back to 20 or 25. So I really caution against owning VIX, because that in the combination of the fact that there's such a huge carry on the way that the structure of the VIX futures, because you can't really buy VIX, as people don't realize. It's not something that's not really traded. What you're in essence doing is buying an ETF, or you're entering into a futures agreement, and what you're doing is you're buying VIX in the future.
Yep.
Anyways, it's like a derivative of a derivative kind of forward. It ends up being complicated, and the long and short of it is there's a huge carry on that. So it's something that really should be left to professionals. I think that the originator of the VIX index said he regretted ever creating it, because he said it was never something that he thought that the average person should be trading.
Oh, no, I think it's an absolute widow maker. And when anytime we touch vol, we have a rule that we won't be long vol more than 2 weeks.
I think that's a great idea. One of the things that I would say is that if you are going to go buy puts on, like, let's say you were going to buy index puts, you're bearish or something, consider doing it buying like a 2750 and then selling a 2550 or a 2600 or something, so that at least you have something that you're short on the other side that is earning, you know, that you're earning the decay of your theta. So it doesn't end up being that your theta burn is as high.
Yeah, because it'll eat you alive. Okay, yeah. While we've still got you here, I want to pack in a couple different things into this last few minutes we've got here. So I'm going to throw them quick at you. So first, we got some, even to me, some surprisingly bad numbers on the China exports. What do you make of that? News came out, for those of you that don't know, news came out last night that China exports, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but I believe they were down 20% year over year. I want to hear what you made of that.
Well, China is having a tough time, and the real question is China having a tough time because of the Trump's trade policies, or is China having a tough time because it was a self-induced slowdown? And I think that that's up for debate still. And there's no doubt that Trump's policies made it harder. But I go back to Felix Zuloff, who actually brought this to my attention, the fact that they have a political cycle in China. And they have a big, huge plenum or whatever it's called, like their Congress meeting in 2021. And it's their 100th anniversary of the Communist Party. So if you're sitting there as a central planner and you're thinking about your economy, you want your economy to be running hot in 2021, just as that kind of Congress is coming and all the big leaders are there. So you don't go and stimulate in 2019. You stimulate in 2020. And in fact, in 2018, this is when Felix brought this up. He said, the next couple of years, we're going to have a slowdown from China, and it's going to be, they're going to be doing it themselves. They're going to be tapping the brakes on. And that's exactly what you've seen. They've crapped and they've clamped down on some of their corruption. They've clamped down on some of their the kind of the stimulus. Now, subsequent to the late last year, the brake ended up being too much, and they realized it was quickly spinning out of control, and they put their foot back down on the accelerator a little bit. But I still question whether this isn't something that they wanted and planned for.
Yeah.
And so when I see the export numbers, I think to myself, yeah, they're terrible, they're awful. I don't know if there's anything to do from it, though, in terms of from an investing point of view. First of all, they're in the rearview mirror, and the time to do something was kind of a year ago or 6 months ago. It's not now to say, whoa, China's, you know, slowing down really hard. It's time to go sell China. No, it's probably all in the price.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a great point. I don't know if you spoke to Felix. I watched that interview he did on Real Vision, and I heard... I think he said that. I've heard somebody say that before. I'm assuming it's him. And I remember thinking that's really a brilliant point. You want to be hot, you know, just much like presidential elections here in the United States. You want to be hot at election time. You know, and that makes sense. I just question whether they're going to be able to maintain that control over the economy. The free market guy in me just thinks that they're going to lose control. I just don't think that they can keep an iron grip on things and control all the variables in the way that they have. Do you think that they can? I mean, what is your take on that?
Well, I don't disagree that, you know, I always remember Jim Chanos would say, this was back when it's easy to forget now, but in the early 2000s, China was the kind of what everyone was aspiring to be. And he says, how come we're sitting here and kind of lauding all these, you know, nine men in a room dictating prices and saying that they somehow can do a better job than our capitalist system?
Yeah,
and he's always said that there's going to be imbalances and there's going to be problems, and that all they're doing is suppressing kind of the misallocation of capital it's not like it's not happening. It's just not the market isn't able to actually correct until it goes to a point where it explodes.
Yeah,
and when so I think that kind of would be your argument. I'm sympathetic to that argument. I don't know when it's going to be. Guys like Kyle Bass, he's been a huge bear. His argument is that you're going to see that as their foreign exchanges reserves are wound down, there's going to get a point where they can no longer support it, and that's what you should be watching for, is the point where they can no longer, they don't have enough foreign reserves anymore to offset the moves.
Yeah.
And he's of the opinion that it's sooner rather than later. Now, having said that, he's been that opinion for the past kind of 5 years. It's one of those things. It's not a problem until it's a problem, and then it's a big problem.
Yeah, no, it is. Okay, so final thought I want to get from you. What is the number one thing that the macro tourist himself is keeping his eye on? What is the number one thing that you're watching right now with interest, and what are you focused on?
Okay, well, you know, it's kind of an offshoot of a trade, but we've been talking about China and we've been talking about the U.S. I think one trade that I really like is the Australian-Canadian dollar. And whenever I can, I always avoid trading against the U.S. dollar because I find it's too much of this risk on, risk off, and there's kind of various different aspects going to, you know, the political side of it, whether Trump is, you know, doing this or that and stuff. So I try to isolate trades. And one of the things that I really believe is that China is no doubt in a situation where it's worse than the U.S., So, and I don't see them stimulating anytime soon. We still, in going back to Felix's point, we're still another kind of year away before they should really put their foot down on the accelerator. So I look at it and I think to myself, U.S. is going to outperform China from an economic point of view. And then I look at the commodity currencies, like Canada's a commodity currency and Australia's a commodity currency. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Australia's number one trading partner, it's China. And then you look at Canada's number one trading partner, it's the U.S. And I think just kind of an easy trade that you should be looking at and thinking about just putting on and forgetting about because it has a nice low volatility is short Australian dollars against Canada. Mm. I think that you're going to see, we've had a housing bubble in Canada, but our bubble is nothing compared to Australia. Australia is like Canada on steroids.
No kidding.
And I think that you're going to find that whatever, you know, problems we have from the China slowdown, Australia is going to have them twice or three times as much. And I just, it's probably one of my favorite kind of high conviction, low volatility trades, which is short Australian dollar Canada.
Yeah, that's fat. I hadn't heard that one before. See, this is gold. I gotta look into that one. That sounds. I'm with you. It makes perfect sense. So, hey, anyway, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us and kind of going around the globe with us there for a little while. I always love having you on. And again, for people just joining us, they can follow you at Kevin Muir, M-U-I-R on Twitter. They can go to the Macro Tourist blog, and they can also catch you and Patrick Cerezin on the Market Huddle. If they just go to YouTube and type in Market Huddle, it'll come up, right?
They'll get it for sure.
All right. Well, hey, pal, appreciate it as always. Great to have you on, and look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.
Thanks for having me on, Zach. I really enjoyed it.
All right. And you guys, thank you so much for joining us. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show, and we got to make things a little bit more condensed due to the fact that we had Kevin on, and we're a little pressed for time. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Kevin. So this will be our closing segment. Got a few things to fit in, and you know, I know we discussed Boeing just in that last segment, but just a few more thoughts on that. The biggest thing that I was trying to point out was irresponsibility by management. And I think that in time, now look, guys, I could be wrong. As I've said on the show, I've been wrong before. Okay. And in some ways I was wrong last week because one of the things that I should have reiterated to you, and I think that I did, but I don't think I made it clear enough, was my take on Boeing and Palo Alto Networks. I think Palo Alto is a little bit different. Well, a lot different. But it was kind of trying to give you examples of extremes, you know, on one end of the, you know, one end of the spectrum and the other. But the thing I wanted to illustrate, or the thing that I wanted to point out, was that sometimes we don't need to dig into all the details and know 100% of the minutia involved, but we can just sit back and say we all know that we should buy low and sell high, right? I think Warren Buffett has proven that's pretty good long-term strategy. And one of the issues I have is something we call the misallocation of capital. And if your business is running great guns, like Boeing's is right now, there's no question about that. Why would you be taking debt on your balance sheet to buy more stock at a record high price? See, that's a problem for me. Because if your business is going great guns, I've got a hard time believing that capital wouldn't be more well allocated or better served or the company better served. If that capital was allocated into the company or further invested into the company, because when you buy back stock, yeah, it's like a sugar high for the price of the stock, but it's doing nothing fundamental to help the company. It's increasing shareholder ownership, and that's a good thing, but at what cost? The other thing is if you want to do that, why not save the cash until the inevitable slowdown where the price of your stock drops and you can get way more bang for your buck, right? And the simple answer is, when a company is trading at record high valuations, the simple answer is there is no reason. They're chasing a stock price. And I have a problem with that because, like my college football coach used to beat into our head, Frosty Westring down at Pacific Lutheran University, we won't focus on outcomes. Focusing on outcomes is what losers do. We focus on inputs. We handle the job in front of us. We do our job and the outcomes take care of themselves. Well, a stock price is the ultimate outcome, right, for a company. It's the ultimate way it's valued. And if I'm focused on the stock price, what am I not doing? I'm not focused. I can't serve two masters, right? I am not focused like a laser beam, in Michael Medved's words. I'm not focused on the core business that I'm running. I can't be. Because a lot of times doing what's best for the stock price isn't what's best for the company. And I'm not alleging there's fraud. I'm not saying there's anything rotten. I'm just saying this is peak cycle type behavior. You know, where it's damn the torpedoes and full steam ahead. Let's just go for the stock price. We're going to $800. We're doing, look, and it's not just me. There's a historical record. You see companies do this. And it may take a few years to play out, but it doesn't end well. Because when all the confetti falls and the party's over and all that kind of stuff, you still got the debt on your balance sheet. And it doesn't make sense. Now, Palo Alto Networks is completely different because they're cash flow negative. That's just ridiculous. And the fact that nobody's screaming that from the rooftops, it's just nuts. Okay, so now, while we've still got time, the other thing I want to talk about is something that we've encountered with our clients, and I think it's a really important thing to put out, okay? Cash can be a wonderful investment for a short period of time, okay? And short could be anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years, right? But we know that cash is losing purchasing power every year, so it's not a long-term strategy, okay? But we all think of asset prices going up and down. Probably a better way to think about it in general, especially when we're looking at indexes. Now, individual stocks can go up and down for all kinds of reasons, infinite number of reasons. But one of the ways to think about it is the price of the asset or the price of the stock moving up and down or the price of the index moving up and down? Or is the price of the currency that that investment is priced in moving up or down, right? Because if the dollar goes up 20% in value relative to other currencies, goods that are bought and sold in U.S. dollars are going to become more expensive, right? In dollar terms, which means their price, their nominal price is going to drop because my dollar's got 20% more purchasing power, right? And for other people around the globe, that makes things buying things from us more expensive. But I think it's a valuable thing because if I hold cash in an account, and the market drops by 50%, people go, I didn't make any money. And I look at them and I go, what are you talking about? And they go, well, I had $500,000 in my account when it started and I got $500,000 now. And I go, yeah, but all the assets around you lost 50% of their price. You did make money. Your purchasing power just went through the roof, right? So the old adage, cash is king, guys, that's not true all the time. But for periods of time, it is. And one of my favorite adages was, an old trader said, got called by a client. He goes, I'm going to move my account. I didn't pay you to be sitting in cash. And the guy goes, you're exactly right, but you're paying me to know when to be into cash. And again, people are going to go, oh, you're timing markets. No. Warren Buffett's got 25% of his company's value sitting in cash right now. No one's busting his chops about it. Why? Everything's too expensive. Go pull up the Google is a shareholder letter he just issued. He said that. He goes, there's these companies that are good companies that we'd like to get a chunk of, that have decent long-term prospects, they're sky high. It's too expensive. And what does Warren know? Warren knows that when things get too expensive, they'll be cheap. We just got to be patient. And like Tom Petty says, waiting is the hardest part. And if you want to know how we differ, you want to know how we increase upside for our clients and lower their risk and lower their costs, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to Bulwark's website. You can just Google us. Check out all the information we've got up there. Sign up for the newsletter. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. You can send us an email, set up a phone consultation, all that kind of stuff. And it's simple. We'll just show you what we've got, show you how we do it, show you what the performance has been, and send you on your way. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us. We got to run, but we'll see you next week. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.